News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Sound Bites. This is America's longest-running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 3rd of September, Anno Domini 2006, and you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
Who's having a party in his own room.
He's having in his own mind. You should. I wish we had a webcam in there, believe me. I didn't
we
know
could
you
turn
could dance,
it that way.
And I still don't.
We cannot have that type of material on the internet, Dave. We've talked about this before.
That is most of the internet.
We would have to charge $19.95 a month.
There you go. The Rob.
What,
the Rob
they're
going to
pay us? Or are you going to pay
yeah,
them?
Yeah, I know. Well, we'll figure that out later.
$19.95 a month for the Rob cam. That's well worth it. Well worth it. It's 8 minutes after
the
hour.
Yeah, but can Rob afford it?
No, he can't.
Him paying all those people?
He's going to pay all those people. On the 3rd of September, it is a beautiful 59 degrees in Rochester, New York.
One story. I know you got a lot of news in that. Well, there was one story in the news this week that really porked me off. I mean, you know, the internet has been around for a while. It does a lot of good things. You can do a lot of good research. You know, it's great for sending emails and all this other stuff. But I'm sorry, I have the problem with this one story.
Uh-oh.
And that's with Radio Shack sending out over 400 emails to tell people they no longer work there.
Yeah.
Emailing you a termination notice.
Yes. Hello. Right. How ruthless can you be that you use the internet because you're too much of a coward to go up to folks and say, sorry, we appreciate you know your work here, but you're no longer going to be needed.
I know. Emailing
people? No, they send somebody an email saying, oh, you're no longer needed here.
Yeah.
And just terminate
that's
it.
Incredibly low class. That's just astonishing.
Talk about using the internet to do bad things. That is, I consider is a bad thing to use it for.
Well, I mean, how many people are now going to feel warm and cozy about working for Radio Shack? Radio Shack, we care for our employees. Yeah, right.
Yeah. We'll send you an email to terminate you.
I actually have a slightly worse story, a friend and a personal experience. A friend of mine worked at a little shopping newspaper, something like that, as a copywriter, typesetter, did the layout for the paper. She's laying out a job employment ad, and it sounds familiar, and it's the address of her store.
She's laying out her own replacement ad. Nice.
And they hadn't told her yet, and they said, oh, by the way, you're fired, and will you train your replacement for us?
Nice! Uh-huh. Okay, you win. She wins. Very, yeah, very nice.
Louise.
That's excellent. Gotta love that. Vista is coming. Amazon. Amazon let us know that. How did they let us know that? Why, they have a page up with the Vista pricing on it. These prices may not be final. Real prices could be much higher. They've been leaked elsewhere as being much higher, but this looks like reasonable numbers anyway.
I just don't understand some of their tiering here. I mean, the home.
Where do we get to that? This is astonishing. If you have home, the basic upgrade is $100. If you want the premium upgrade, I don't even know what that includes, it's $160. If you want the business upgrade, it's $200. And if you want the ultimate upgrade, that's $260.
And $100 more if you buy the full version rather than an upgrade.
And all of those are $100 more. So that leaves us already with home basic, home premium, business, and ultimate.
But one step before that, here's one other.
Well, wait a minute. Let me finish this, and then you can talk about that, because I know that's important, too. But let me finish this.
You can't go there before. Nice shot there, Rob. You got to have this to get that.
Right, but let me finish this, because I'm in the middle of it. Then you can not only have all of those, but for each of those, you can have additional licenses. So if you bought the home basic for $200 or $100 for the upgrade, you can pay another $90 to get an additional license. or another $180 to get the additional license for premium.
Well, they are acknowledging that a lot of people have more than one computer in their home now.
Yeah, nowadays.
Yeah, but how confusing is this? Well, I've got this and that, and I have this, and I don't know what I'm doing with that, and it's blah, 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 blah. We now have home basic upgrade, home premium upgrade, business upgrade, ultimate upgrade, home basic, home premium, business, and ultimate. Basic upgrade license pack, premium upgrade license pack, premium license pack. I've missed one somewhere already. Upgrade license for the ultimate, regular license for the ultimate, upgrade license for business, regular license. By the time you're done, you've got 15, 20 different things here, and it's just going to be horribly, horribly confusing.
That's probably why Microsoft pulled it all, because it wasn't ready to announce any of this yet.
Well, geez and crackers, you know, it's. I mean, I can understand having a choice in laundry soaps,
but
there's a little much here, I think.
Yeah.
Well, they're just trying to, now, like we were saying before, they've gone so long, XP has been out so long, that they're desperate to make new money, that they're offering all these different products, and how much difference is there going to be between Home Basic and Home Premier?
Right, who knows?
Yeah.
And that's the other part of the problem. By the time people are done, they're just going to ask somebody. And of course, this works out in Microsoft's favor. They're just going to ask somebody, and that person's going to say, well, you need the next grade up.
Yeah.
Because they'll make money on it.
You always need the next grade up.
Yeah, exactly.
But before they even go to get to Vista, though, here's the thing, folks. To get Vista, you're going to need an 800 megahertz or faster computer, 512 megabytes of RAM, I'd recommend.
Absolute minimum.
Don't even run any programs
on top of that.
You're going to need DirectX and 15 gig of hard disk space. So,
just for the operating system.
Yeah, just for the OS.
And that should be theoretically available on January 30th. We're going to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you on Soundbites and 1180 WHAM.
Wow. H-A-M. Computer talk you can understand. It's Soundbites, America's longest-running computer show on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Once again, here's Nick Francesco.
Hello.
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 Hello. It's the boys. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 18 minutes after the hour, cite me at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. All right, before we get back to the phones, feel free to give us a call. We're at 222-1180 if you're in the 585 area code. Outside that 585 area code, it's 295-1180, 1-800-295-1180, that is. And, of course, if you're a Verizon Wireless customer, it's star 1180. Now, we've had some news on the web of MacBooks randomly shutting down. And there's a new website, not that new anymore, but there's a website out there called MacBookRandomShutdown.com. Steve will have that up on the thing pretty soon, which is dedicated to, hard to believe, but to the random shutdown of MacBooks. One 2 gigahertz MacBook owner purchased it in the summer of 2006 and has been having trouble ever since. About 4 weeks after it arrived, it started randomly shutting down without explanation. Matthew Swanson of Atlanta, Georgia, put up the website about this. The site, which started on August 15th, has been generating about 2,000 visitors a day, and Swanson is thinking that'll increase to about 4,000 visitors a day. There's even a test for the MacBook Random Shutdown Syndrome, or RSS as they're calling it, because, you know, that hasn't been used enough. Basically it seems to be an overheating problem because it's a very simple test. I'm not going to go through all the steps here on the air, but, basically it sets both processors, on high. You'll hear the fans kick in, run for about 15 minutes. And, if you're affected by the problem, your MacBook will shut down. If it doesn't, then you wait 20 minutes and try it again. And there you are. Apparently, if it does shut down randomly, make contact with AppleCare at 1-800-APPLECARE, or of course your brilliant local Macintosh dealer, and have it checked out. Steve?
Well, one of the things that we've noticed is we've had a lot of people calling up and saying my computer's running hot, and one of the answers is yes, it does.
Yes,
and that's normal. Especially a dual processor computer, it is going to run a lot hotter than your previous computer
did. Right, when you get a fast, hot, fast machine like that stuck in a little tiny case like that, yeah, it's going to run hot.
So it's in the last couple, 3 years, even in the PC world as well, you really can't use laptops on your lap anymore.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I hope they're not actually using them on their lap. We've already talked about that problem for gentlemen, the overcooking syndrome.
Yeah. But I put a temperature gauge on both a MacBook and MacBook Pro. The internal CPU temperature runs about 160 degrees Fahrenheit.
That's pretty good.
Normal.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the external temperature, you know, could get close to 100 degrees.
Right. Well, but that's not the problem they're having. Well, the problem they're having is that it gets so hot it shuts down.
It's so hot. There's a thermal protection system built into it. If it gets too hot, it shuts itself down rather than damaging the components.
Right.
So some of this could be related to some of the earlier problems we talked about earlier this year, that during production, a lot of the plastic components are covered in plastic film to protect them during production. And the film covering the heat exhaust vents have been accidentally left on during
that
final assembly.
Mm-hmm.
So that there's no way for the heat to escape.
Right.
But one of the things we're recommending is get a little lift. Most laptops have little feet at the bottom so that the air can get underneath the computer.
Right.
But even using your computers for a short amount of time, sliding them around desks as people normally do, you wear those feet off.
You're right, right.
So get a little lift under the computer, let the air flow underneath, and that helps keep it cool.
Also, a lot of people tend to put them on a table that's got a tablecloth on it. That just plugs up the hole.
Yeah, but it is an issue. Apple hasn't officially responded yet. Right now, they're going through standard warranty repair since all the MacBooks are under warranty.
Right.
Well, the one thing I've told folks is you can go to your local home repair store, and you can always buy those little rubber feet. You can put them on the bottom of chairs and that type of stuff. And
even fabric and sewing stores have them.
Yeah, and they're rubber. Sticky them on the bottom of them so you can stick them onto the underside of the computer, the laptop, and you just put them towards the back. This way it puts a nice tilt. It's easier for your hands.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And now you're getting the tilt and the airflow.
That's especially common after people wear their feet off.
Yeah, I mean, and the feet are so small that they're normally
I'm missing one on my computer already.
There you go.
I mean, I think it's for like $2.
And your computer wobbles when you're trying to type on it because one of the feet are missing.
Right, right.
And I mean, these aren't huge. I mean, they're like 1-inch squares. And they're maybe an eighth of an inch to a quarter inch thick. And they got the tape on, you just pull it off, stick them on, and they're white or clear. I've seen them in all different colors. Just put them on underneath the under part of your computer, the laptop, and
good advice.
Use it that way.
Good advice. All right, we're going to the phones now. Our first caller is Jonathan from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Jonathan. What's your question?
Hey, I have a wireless router in the house. It's attached to a PC, and I have two laptops and another PC networked into it. I just got a Dell Latitude, which hopefully the battery's not going to burn it up, for work. And I have a wireless card in it, and it doesn't run very fast. If I try to do some monkeying around, so actually it's hardwired right into the router, will that increase the speed of my laptop?
The speed of doing what?
Yeah.
Well, everything I'm doing on the laptop is into the company network. And I can only do it, because of security, it's a bank, I can only do it through my laptop.
Well, the only thing hardwiring will speed up versus wireless is large file transfers. Because hardwired is generally 100 megabit, and your wireless is 54 megabit. So the only thing that's going to change is large files, 100 meg files, will copy faster from one computer to another.
Are you saying that it's slow on the network, or it's slow everywhere? In other words, if you go to a plain old everyday website, is it slow there too?
No, it seems to be okay. For example,
all right, then the problem is not your latitude. The problem is the network
or the
system at the other end, your work's system. If every place else you go to is fast and that one place you go to is slow, the problem is that one place, not your machine.
Yeah.
And plus the fact that
hardwiring in them won't make any difference.
Right, general internet speeds are only 3 or 4 megabit, so even 54 megabit wireless is significantly faster than internet speeds.
Even 11 megabit.
Yeah, the generation B.
Right. The bottom line here is that if every place else you go is fast and that one place is slow, it's the one place, not your laptop.
Okay, because my boss is one who's saying, well, he says his goes a lot faster, and maybe But it could also be my PC because, you know, it's been...
Yeah, but what is he comparing it against? You know, if he's only comparing it to that one site, and it seems fast to me, and he's not surfing, say, other websites and comparing it to other surfing, he's really not using it from any other, you know, valid reference point.
And are you seeing the performance problems just on internet pages or general operation of the computer?
Mostly it's when I'm tied into, like, my Lotus Notes is through the company.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, in fact,
that's slow anyway.
Some problems with it. It stops responding, but for all I know, it could be my laptop.
Well, it could be. Here's the thing. First, you need to check on how your machine is running to begin with. If everything else is fast and Lotus Notes is the only thing that's slow, then you look at how much RAM you have. If you've got 512 meg and you're running a bunch of stuff, yeah, it could very well be that your system is slow. A gig would be the minimum I'd recommend to run Lotus Notes over a network these days.
I would actually have to call and get permission. You know, company property. I think to do anything, I have to get permission from them.
Well, but my point is, at least you can troubleshoot it that way. You know,
okay.
So that's where I think you need to start, and from there you can see whether the problem is indeed with hardware or software. But my thought right at the moment is that it's either the VPN software you're using or whatever, but it's not the internet itself. We got to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. We've got more people on the line. Please hold on. We'll get to you shortly, if not eventually. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on Soundbites 1180 WHAM.
Online, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. Now, back to Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 32 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. There is a new virus coming up. We've talked about a virus that attacks Intel processors directly. It doesn't matter what operating system you're using. This will attack the processor directly. Well, it matters what operating system you're using in terms of how that virus gets to the chip. But beyond that, it actually hits the chip itself. There's another new one out there targeting both 32 and 64-bit processors from AMD. I hate to hear that myself, of course.
Yeah.
It so far is just a harmless proof of concept, but it could be used as a starting point to create malware that affects computers with multiple different operating systems. Once it runs, it's got pretty low-level access to the system. It can pretty much do whatever it wants. That's going to be a problem, I think, in the future. So far, the last large-scale outbreak at the chip level was in 1998, the Chernobyl virus that embedded itself in the BIOS.
Yeah.
They're pretty rare right at the moment, but I think we're going to see them get bigger. So just a reminder, make sure you've got your antivirus software.
I mean, thankfully, you know, this is one thing that's slowed down quite a bit. I mean, the virus writers, more of them are getting into the spam and that type of stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Because most of the viruses, a lot of the viruses pass through email, and most of the internet providers are scanning email before they send it along. So viruses, the spread of viruses is getting slower.
Well,
the number of viruses out there, 7 out of every 10 emails last year was a virus. But most of them are blocked somewhere along the line before they get to somebody. All right, our next caller, Dick from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Dick. What's your question? Good, how are you?
I have Windows XP, Internet Explorer 6.1, and I cannot get to websites through Internet Explorer, yet I can ping www.google, and I do get out to the website, and I do get a response from the IP address.
What do you get instead when you try to go to Google?
I get a message that says, cannot connect. I'm not at home right now. I'd give you the exact one.
How do you normally connect via the Internet? Do you have broadband of some sort, or are you dial-up?
I have Roadrunner through a router.
Mm-hmm.
And IE will not connect. You've got one of two things wrong. You've either got some sort of virus that's trying to send you somewhere else, and that is maybe being blocked by a firewall, or you've got a bad download. You've got a bad installation of IE. Those are the only two things I can think of.
Some DLL
No, what else?
Yeah.
It else could be, though, is his network connection. The socket 32 gets messed up.
Yeah, that WinSock fix.
The WinSock fix is the first thing that I would recommend, because he's pinging it and getting a valid IG, there is a, if you can go to somebody else's computer, we've got on our, I heard this on Soundbites, a WinSock fix for XP. It's down at the bottom. You download it. It's a very small file, and you run it. What it does is erases and resets your WinSock settings, because you are getting a valid IP, but that might be messed up. So I would first start there.
Okay.
You can also try Firefox, a different browser, see if that works.
I did try Firefox. It didn't make any difference.
Yeah,
Firefox also doesn't work. Yeah.
It's definitely the WinSock.
Get that WinSock fix and see if that fixes it for you.
You could also try connecting your computer directly to your broadband and skipping the router just as a test.
Yep.
Maybe something in the router is misconfigured or got messed up.
Yep.
Other machines can get out.
Okay, then, yeah, definitely. It's WinSock 32. So download the fix on a different machine. Move it over to that machine, either burn it to CD or whatever, however you want to move it.
It's on a floppy.
Right. Yeah, and then
I can connect across the wire.
Okay, there you go.
There you go, then.
Give it a shot. Right. Let us know how you make out.
All right, great. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Our next caller is Billy on a cell phone. Welcome, Billy. What's your question?
Hey, how are you doing, guys?
Good.
Hey.
How are you?
Pretty good. Listen, I was just messing around with my computer, and I just found out that it has a bogus version of Windows Media Center Edition on it, and it keeps telling me, you know, you don't have a genuine version.
Yeah, WGA bogus.
It may be a fake message.
Yeah.
Do you have a valid Windows Media Center sticker on the side of the computer with a serial number on it?
No, I had a hacker put it in. So
there you go.
They caught me. But anyway, so I went to a place. If you want me to say their name or whatever.
No.
Okay. Well, I got a genuine version of another Windows Media Center Edition. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be putting it on tonight.
Yeah.
Now, when it clicks for that, when I put that key code in, should it automatically bam, or will it mess up and I got to reformat?
All right. Here's the thing, Billy. Once you put the CD in and you reinstall Windows XP Media over XP Media.
Well, do I have to reinstall it?
No. You can put it right over because you're doing it with a valid one.
Well, there's two.
It'll ask you for the key code on the side of that sticker.
Yeah.
You put that in. Now you'll have a genuine authorized.
Right. You may not need to run the Windows installer at all. You may be able to just go into one of the menus says authenticate this copy. Put in your new serial number.
Yeah, that's what I want to know. If I put that thing in,
that might work.
Because it's the exact same thing over the top.
If that doesn't work,
I was going to buy it from Windows, but they didn't have the Media Center available. It was, you know, their XP or Professional.
Right. Mm-hmm. If that doesn't work, you may need to do a Windows reinstall over Windows. And if that doesn't work, you may need to do an erase install.
That'll work, though, usually.
But, yeah, usually that the putting the right key code in will work.
Excuse me. So give it a shot and let us know how you make out.
All right. Thanks. Sorry, I got lost in my own head. It's very it's vast and empty in there. And
say hello to anybody for us?
That if I find anybody else in there,
please.
I certainly will. The next caller is Brian from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Brian. What's your question?
Good morning. I've been a cable modem user for 8 years. I think I was very early in the process. And
right.
I had modem for one of the original modems. And just recently, they kind of just showed up out of the blue saying I needed to replace my modem. They come in, put a new modem in, and now my Linksys router needs to be reset about daily. It appears that what happens is it loses its IP, and all it needs is a DHCP release and renew. But do you guys know what they've changed and why this would be happening?
What it sounds to me like is you've gotten a bad new router.
Yeah.
I would call them up and say, look, I'm having issues with this router. Don't tell them you got a router connected to it. Tell them your cable modem, you have to reset it every day, have them replace it.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
We're ready for your computer talk that you can understand. Now back to Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
At 44 minutes after the hour, you are listening to Soundbites. Before we go back to the phones, this is my favorite story of the week. I got to say it's my favorite. Computer Associates, as you know, puts out one of the best antivirus programs around. It's called eTrust. If you are a Frontier DSL customer, of course, it's free to you. Just download it and use it. Unfortunately, their antivirus software inadvertently flagged part of the Windows operating system as bad stuff.
What do you mean inadvertently?
That's my point, yeah. An overnight update caused the software to flag a security-related process in Windows as malicious. The faulty update caused some Windows 2003 servers to crash and become unusable. Excuse me, more unusable. It was mistakenly flagging the Windows LSASS.exe process, the LSAS process. They fixed the issue. The whole thing was down less than 7 hours. So the update was released at 2 a.m. and by 9:30 in the morning, it was fixed. So if you're one of those people who doesn't turn your machine on until the evening, you were fine. So not a lot of people had a real problem with it. But I have to admit, it is kind of amusing. The thing is, there is a virus that's very similar to the LSAS process and is supposed to, in fact, replace it. However, they actually took the signature of the LSAS process rather than of the virus. And so there were a few problems here and there. There are those of us who think that was a feature, but it appears to have been a bug. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Marty from Niagara Falls. Slowly we turn to him. Marty, what's your question?
Hey, good morning, everybody. How are you?
Peachy, how are you?
I took your advice and went out yesterday and bought myself a nice new iMac computer.
Nice.
And I got it plugged in, and it won't recognize my wireless router. It recognizes the system. It'll pick up the signal, but when I punch in the password, the WEP key, it just says cannot connect.
With some third-party wireless routers, you have to enter the key in hexadecimal. You can't use ASCII.
Okay, how do you do that?
And Macs are considered easy?
Well, the Mac knows how to do it in hex, in ASCII. It's the third-party router that needs it in hexadecimal.
Now, wait, hold on a second. You've already had this router, and it's been working with other machines?
Yep, it's hooked in with a cable to another PC laptop, and it works fine. I can sign on right now.
Okay, so when you set up the WEP key on the router... You told it I want to do WAP, and you put in a key.
It came with the key number already on it. That's a number that was printed right on the router.
Uh-huh.
On a tag on the bottom. So I punch in that number, and it says it can't connect it.
Well, let me suggest
Is that number in ASCII or in hex?
It's just letters and numbers. So.
Yeah. Here's what I suggest you do. Go into the router itself using the web browser on the machine that's hooked up directly.
Okay.
And make sure that WEP is, in fact, turned on. Because WEP is not necessarily always turned on any router that you get.
If it's not on, the Mac won't ask for a password. It will just connect. If the Mac is asking for a password, there is a password on the router.
But if he's told the Mac there's a WEP key, here it is. And the router is not set up to use a WEP key, there should be no connection.
Well, when you hook to, with the other computer, you turn it on, it'll say it recognizes, like, there's three or four wireless systems around here, and it picks them all up. But
it
needs a security code to get in.
When you try to join the network, if the Mac is asking you to type a password, it sees that there is a password on the wireless network.
Right.
And are you sure it's picking up your wireless network?
Yeah, because it shows, like, the other ones in the neighborhood have different names, and mine shows up, so.
Right, all right. I had that, I have to say, while Steve thinks about that for a second, I had that the other day. I was sitting on my porch, and I was connected. I just turned on my laptop, and I connected, and I started to work. And I suddenly realized, wow, this is ludicrously slow. So I went and looked at my connection, and I was, in fact, connected to somebody else in my neighborhood. They were on, I have DSL, and it's ludicrously fast, and they were not on DSL, and they were not ludicrously fast, and that's how I noticed. Hold on the line, Marty, and we'll come back to you after the break. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enreich, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, Marty in Niagara Falls, me, Nick Francesco, and you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 52 minutes after the hour, we have Marty on the line. Marty, you still there?
Yes, I am.
Well done. Steve?
On many third-party routers, you have to enter your key in hex. You can't use ASCII. I've posted an article from Apple's knowledge base on different ways to enter the password. If you get a menu in the enter password box, you can tell it whether you're using 40-bit hex or 40-bit ASCII or 128-bit hex or 128-bit ASCII. So it depends on whether the key that's printed on the side of side of your router is in ASCII or it's in hex.
Well, I'm guessing that it's ASCII because it's got letters and numbers. It's not all numbers.
Well, hex can also have numbers and letters.
If there's no number higher than if there's no letter higher than F, it may well already be in hex.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I would start there. Check out those links. Steve has posted them. If you go to our website, soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you.
Go there a lot.
There you go. And click on the links tab. The third link down is the list of sites mentioned weekly on the show. And you'll see them listed on the left-hand column. They're listed by date, and at the top will be today's date. So the second one in so far is, I guess it'll stay the second one. Is the MacBook random shutdown issue. No. Wait, the top one, joining an encrypted wireless network.
If you precede the key with a dollar sign that tells the Mac to send it as a hex key instead of an ASCII key. If you're using 40-bit encryption, it's a 10-character key. If you're using 128-bit encryption, it's a 26-character key. So it depends on how many characters are in your key that will tell you whether it's 40 or 28-bit or whether it's a hex or ASCII.
It has 10.
So that's probably a 40-bit key. Now, on the other side of the coin, a 40-bit WEP key is ridiculously easy to break. What was it, about a minute and a half?
Yeah.
So you might want to increase your security to WPA so that it's your network isn't so easy to break into.
That's what the Apple people told me. I've already called them. I've already called Verizon.
Yeah.
Well, it's nothing to do with them. It's the router you're using. You have to change it in your router.
Right. Okay. At the very least, start with the link he gave you. Set it up to be WEP. That's certainly the wireless encryption protocol is better than nothing.
Yeah.
And we'll protect you from 90% of the people out there. So definitely do that and let us know if that doesn't help. Call us back. All right. Our next caller is John from Henry out of New York. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Yeah, my question is probably a stupid question, but...
the only dumb question is the one you don't ask.
I have Windows 2000, and every now and then, I like to chat like in Yahoo Sports and all that, in like regional and New York and all that.
Right.
And for some reason, it's not letting me in. When I go to the main menu, it doesn't let me in.
What happens when you try?
Yeah.
Basically, it says click here to wait a little longer or go back to, your original or whatever it says sometimes.
What chat program are you using?
Pardon me?
You're doing this through your web browser, right?
Correct. Should I get Firefox or something?
Well, you should always get Firefox. That's not a question. But... Yeah. If you then go to a different chat, do you get in?
Okay.
No, I
can't get into any.
If you use a chat program like AIM or MSN or Jabber, do they work?
I can't get into those either for some reason.
And then what happens? You wait a while and it all works?
Yeah, I wait a while and it won't work. And I clean my catchy and all that and clean my cookies out and... clean my hard drive out and all that.
No, the hard drive has current antivirus software, and you're also running Adware and SpyBot.
Yep.
Because it sounds like somebody.
And I also use eTrust too.
It's certainly possible that there's something in your cache that's preventing you from getting in.
Yeah.
But it's unlikely.
It's just the oddest thing because I used to be able to before, but now.
Wait a minute. Now, you said you were using EasyTrust?
Yeah.
Now, do you have a firewall on that?
I'm not really sure because I I had some work done on my computer from Lightspeed.
you might want to check and see. They might be blocking you, you know.
The firewall might be set too high, so it's blocking the traffic from working.
Yeah, but it's intermittent. Right? I mean, sometimes you can get in and sometimes you can't.
No, I can't get in at all, period.
Oh! At all?
Yeah.
Then, yes, I would definitely check to see how high your firewall is set and whether it needs to be lowered a little bit. I'd also make sure you have the right version. Oh, I see. No, I'm sorry. I completely misunderstood. If you can't get in at all, then I would also check to make sure that you have Java installed and it's the latest version of Java, because most of the chat programs on Yahoo are Java-based.
What he could do for quick and dirty, though, is down in the lower right-hand... Hold on just a second. Down the lower right-hand corner, you know the Easy Trust symbol down there? Try disabling that just temporarily. You can say, you know, to the next boot or whatever. Disable it just for a few minutes to see if you can then get out.
Right, and then re-enable it, and then you'll know where the problem lies. It might also be an Internet Explorer, the thing being set too high, the security being set too high.
But Java is a free download from Sun.
Right, right. Yep. So that's not a problem. So I would check all of those things and see what happens. All right, our next caller is Eric from Hilton. Welcome, Eric. What's your question?
Yes, I've got a XP home. Mm-hmm. And on Roadrunner, I'm using the Easy Trust antivirus.
Mm-hmm.
And the last couple of times I've run a scan, I get a infection that I don't seem to be able to get rid of. I'm running Thunderbird and.
You need to dance the Security Tango. Go to securitytango.com. Click the Let's Dance button and follow that all the way down. Easy Trust is great. It's one of the programs we recommend, but no single antivirus program kills everything that's out there on your system. The Security Tango is designed to go right through your system in a systematic way and get rid of everything. I would try that if I were you. We're going to take a quick break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes. Rob Jason is in here ready to do the news, the weather, the sports, all the important information. And then we'll be back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Rob Linton, with me, Nick Francesco, and all of you. If you're on the phone, stay on the line. If you're not on the phone, I have no idea why not. You should be, because we are the greatest computer show in the known universe. Say it along with me. You know who we are. We are Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Get online now. Call 222-1180, the Choice 1 toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180, or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Now, before we go too far, I want to talk a little bit about what goes on at our website. That's soundbites.org. Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. One of the things you should notice immediately upon getting onto the site is that we have a little ticker that tells you
today's
how long we've been on the air. And today is our birthday. Soundbites has been on the air for 17 years today. Happy birthday to us. Happy birthday to us. Happy birthday, dear Soundbites. Happy birthday to us. Hey. All right. That's first. We've gotten that out of the way now. 17 years on the air.
Where's it all gone?
I have children younger than our show. and I'm just really thrilled about that. We're very pleased about that. Every week we do a poll. Last week's poll was about Microsoft's upcoming Zune Media Player. 326 of you voted, making it, my goodness, I can't find a thing on here anymore, making it number 112 on the all-time hit list. Thank you all. Shockingly, 44% of you couldn't care less. 30% of you have never heard of the Zoom. 10% prefer the iPod, 9% want to know if it'll work with Linux, 6% think it 6% think it looks interesting, and 5 of you cannot wait. Today's poll is about Firefox. Version 2 is in beta right now.
Yep.
Now, before I go any farther, let me simply say to each and every one of you who is frantically running to the Firefox website right now to download it, do not.
Yes.
Do not download it. It is supposed to be for developers only. It will crash your system. It's really designed for the people who are working on the product and who are writing specialized web pages that use some of the new features. Those are the folks who should be going to the site right now.
Because they can deal with the crashes, because they can expect it.
But if any of you download it and it crashes your machine, truly, don't call us, because it's not for you.
Yeah.
But in terms of this, the choices are, I can't wait, yawn, and no thank you, Internet Explorer, forever. Right now, we have about 81 votes on the system right now. I can't wait is in the lead with 69%, followed by 30% saying yawn. One person says no thank you, i.e. forever. This may change your mind. Wait until you hear what's coming up in it.
Did Bill Gates get in there and vote?
No.
Yeah, there's a new refresh of the themes and user interfaces. Built-in phishing protection will try to warn users when they encounter suspected web forgeries. People trying to get you to the wrong homepage. Enhanced search capabilities. You'll see search suggestions as you type into the boxes. New search engine manager makes it easier to add and remove and reorder search engines. There's an inline spell checker for all you people on the Soundbites web forums who are porked off at the lack of spell checking. Live titles. You can now create a bookmark with a live title anytime you find any sort of micro summary, or which is a regularly updated summary of the information on the website. The new add-on manager is much improved, and there's an even better Windows installer. Now, some of you have already seen some of those things in Safari.
Well, one of the things, I don't know if I mentioned this earlier, at Apple's developer conference, they were showing off the next version of Mac OS X, which is going to be called Leopard, due out in the spring, maybe by the time Vista finally ships. but last year's developer conference, Apple had posters all around their conference center, you know, Redmond, start your photocopiers, mm-hmm. when Tiger came out. So this year's developer conference, you know, Jobs was in his keynote, you know, said, you know, we were just kidding. but apparently someone in Redmond actually did start their photocopier. They were showing side by side features in Mac OS X Tiger that are identical to the Windows Vista.
Yeah.
The blue aqua theme, Eros right. under Vista. Right. The RSS reader in Internet Explorer 7 that shows you the summary of all your RSS feeds and has a little slider bar on how much of the summary you want right. to see is exactly the same color, size, shape, in position that as Safari from System 10.4.
Right, and now you're saying the same thing is going to be in Firefox.
Yeah, so it's you know, they were just kidding.
You're right.
But they did, Jobs did say they aren't showing to the public or even in the public forums all the new features of Leopard because they don't want Microsoft to copy them so
right,
fast.
Right. But at any rate, there you are. So go to our website at soundbites.org, and then you can enter in a vote. When you're done with that, check the little yellow box underneath. Click on Give Us Your Opinion. It will take you to my website, asknick.com.
That's asknick.com.
He's a mean, vicious, nasty, no-good, baggy-eyed, marble-headed ignoramus.
And that's just the short version. And at my website, you can enter an actual comment in, fewer than 256 characters, up to 255, that would be. About what you think of that. Feel free, please, to look around my website. I put out a newsletter 3 times a week. That's only $15 a year. We have reviews and forums and all kinds of other nifty, interesting things. And then come back to soundbites.org. Check out our links, our FAQs, the great forums we have there, and all the other nifty stuff. And, of course, you can buy many, many Soundbites clothing and paraphernalia items for your enjoyment and prove to the world how much you love Soundbites, particularly today on our 17th anniversary, our 17 years on radio. We're very pleased and very thrilled about that. Now, back to the phone.
Wait a minute. 17 years on the radio?
17 years. 17 years on the radio.
So would it hurt your feelings to let you know that I was very, very young when you first went on the radio?
You were like, what, two?
No, not that young.
You're our puppy. We know you're a puppy.
He was probably just
asking you a question. In that 17 years, how many times have you gotten arrested for what you do on or off the air?
We can't even get arrested. We're not even that good yet.
Or committed.
Committed, yes. Arrested, yes. No. We've been having, it's been 17 years of fun for us. Every once in a while, we've actually answered a question correctly. That's just the law of averages.
What was the computer systems that were out when you first started?
They were stone tablets and Abacai.
Yeah.
Is that back when server systems took up like whole rooms?
Yeah.
Whole
basement, I worked on a system at Kodak that still used punch cards.
Oh, wow.
And literally, I had to, if we were entering a new film code or something like that, I had to type up punch cards and submit them.
Yep.
And when I was in computer science, the assembly class that I took was done on punch cards. And I had to literally punch up all, write the code, and they would submit it, and they'd do up my punch cards. And then run it down to the lab to run it overnight. And then I'd get a printout the next day to see if I had to make any adjustments to my code.
Yeah, we started in 1989. The Mac had only been out for 5 years. So we had a lot of Mac questions. We had a lot of questions about older machines, Apple IIs.
386s.
Right, IBM PCs.
First microcomputer I worked on was a DEC Rainbow running CPM.
And, very nice.
I had to remember all the PIP commands.
PIP commands. And
I worked on a Trash 80.
There you go. A bunch of machines were that are no longer around today.
And look at how far it's come.
Yes, but it's actually gotten easier. We have fewer operating systems to have to deal with now. Nobody calls about Ataris anymore.
Ataris.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Commodores.
Nobody calls about Commodores. Nobody calls about any of those things. It's just Windows, Mac, Linux. That's it. We're done. It's easier now. The world has gotten easier for us after 17 years. You know, people call up and say, you know, my first computer was a 686.
I remember an Apple IIe.
I loved the Apple II. I loved the Apple II, the original Apple II.
Yeah.
I had a CPM card in it. It was a Z80 processor made by Microsoft back when they were into hardware and selling other people's operating systems. It was very cool. But we are 17 years on the air. So buy some stuff from our store to celebrate 17 years on the air. In the meantime, we're going to go back to the phones, and we're going to talk back, apparently, to Brian from Rochester. Welcome, Brian. What's your question this time?
Yes, when I open up the command channel on my VIC-20,
yeah.
I then load 818.
There you go.
If I have two floppy drives, they will lock up if you don't specify an individual command channel.
That's exactly right. You can't multi-run the command channels simultaneously. Yeah, sure.
No, actually, I had a couple. Actually, a follow up on a question I'd asked you guys earlier in the year. I was having problems with a server. And I thought it was a virus issue, and I've been meaning to call you. And I found a nice dark, kind of cold weekend to get back to you on it. I thought it was a virus. We went to war with it, and I was pulling my hair out trying to find it. What it turned out to be was bad capacitors on the motherboard. I hadn't heard you guys talk about that on your show.
Really?
Yeah, I actually found a problem with it. It's actually quite pervasive problems, especially in some of the Dells and some of the other machines. They're starting to go bad now.
There have been a couple issues with some of the iMacs and eMacs that the capacitors will swell and bulge and actually leap their capacitance gel.
Yeah, and this thing was acting like a virus. I mean, all day and night, and you guys were charitable and kind, trying to help me out with it, and I did everything I possibly could, software wise. And major props to Dell, because I looked all over the internet and I found a problem on Dell's blog, on their forum.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, I gotta tell you, there was some vicious stuff on there, and they left it on. And I gotta tell you, you know, I'm sure that they monitor it for language and things like that.
Right,
but,
right.
Yeah. But they left quite a bit of that information on there, and I found it.
Cool,
and,
props to them. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I was going to say, if you make enough noise with Dell, they will send you a new motherboard, or they will repair it free, regardless of the age of your computer.
Wow, nice. That's something that we don't do often enough. We tend to look for software-related solutions, but sometimes you pop the cover off the machine, and the problem is obvious.
Mm-hmm. Well, I went down to one of the local stores. I couldn't get a motherboard. They were back ordered for quite a while. I went down to local.
Well, that usually tells you something too. That model motherboard has a high failure rate.
Right.
Well, I was able to change capacitors myself, but you know, not everybody's gonna grab a soldering iron and start chiseling away on it.
Right.
Yeah, but sometimes I think you'll agree, Brian. You can sit there and pop the top off, and you can sit there and stare at the traces and everything else on the motherboard. You might not always see it either. Matter of fact, I found a problem on a motherboard one time that got hit. And it was a small IC, and it was, you're talking, maybe a 16th by a 16th inch size chip at the max.
And we've got the same eyes. We're about the same age, so that stuff gets even smaller and blurrier.
Yeah, exactly.
So. You got it. And the bifocals don't work quite well. And just a small corner out of that had blown out, and that was enough to make a defect out of it.
Sure, of course.
Yeah, hey, I had one more question, actually, for you guys.
Sure.
I was cleaning out my basement, and I dug up the obligatory box of tapes we all used to carry around in our car, cassettes.
Sure, sure.
Things like that, and I was like, oh, that's cool. So I popped a few in to my ancient cassette player, and these cassettes had played very, very, very well, especially some of the high-end tapes. And I remember back in the day, we used to do storage on tapes.
Right.
You guys had said there's a pretty decent failure rate on CDs.
Yeah.
Up to, in as much as a minimum of a year or two.
Yep.
Why don't we explore looking into going back to cassettes and compressing data?
Well, you can do that. A lot of people do. You can buy DAT tape machines and everything else and put them away. The big problem with tape drives has always been that you have to have two motors.
Right.
Both on the take-up spindle and on the send-off spindle. And the reason for that is otherwise you start stretching the tape, and that is what really damages them. But if you have the right kind of drive, you still eventually will, because it's an actual touch, it's a friction device, right?
Right.
You eventually will wear down the tape. But if you don't read it often and you keep it properly stored, it can last a very long time. The real problem comes in losing that hardware, because not a lot of places make tape drives anymore.
And it's expensive. 100 gig tape drive is like $2,000.
Right.
And 100 gig hard drive is what, 80 bucks? 100
yes.
bucks?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And the real problem, it's linear.
Yeah.
If you want something at the end of the tape, you have to read through the entire tape. Not only does that take a long time, but that puts more wear on the tape.
Sure. It just seems like with today's technologies and stuff, so they were to be tackled. I suppose the best solution is just archive.
Well, and
right.
The failure rate of CDs isn't inherent to CD. It's inherent to the cost.
Right.
People want free after rebate, so they're really cheap, crappy manufacturing to make them that
right.
Inexpensive.
If you buy, for example, the KPM Media, the Kodak Gold CDs, they'll last you 100 years.
Yep.
But you're going to pay for that 100-year backup. So that's the big thing. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you on the 17th anniversary production of Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
These guys can answer your questions. Back to more Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, you're listening to the 17th anniversary.
You're living Soundbites, too.
You're living Soundbites for 17 years, and don't you forget it. Before we get back to the phone, spreadsheets are the next security hole you'll find in your system. In the wake of all of these laptop thefts and data breaches and all this other stuff, some IT shops are launching new initiatives to ensure that sensitive corporate data stored in spreadsheets and business intelligence tools remains secure. The security efforts are taking on a new urgency as more workers gain access to business intelligence tools and spreadsheets used for business intelligence functions. Several recent incidents, including the inadvertent exposure of sensitive data for about 5,000 customers by Verizon Wireless. That was last week. The theft of a laptop from the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs that contained personal information from some 26 million veterans. Both involved unsecured spreadsheets. Spreadsheets are often the most common method used to analyze corporate data, and yet they have not received the same security scrutiny as transactional systems and web applications. You can, when you save a spreadsheet, put a password on it. It's real easy to do. Nobody does it.
Because it's a pain when you forget your password.
Well, yeah. You're right. But the problem is now they lose their laptop and 26 million veterans are exposed to identity theft because somebody was too lazy to put a password on the spreadsheet. So, folks, if you're going to take spreadsheets home from work, on your laptop or even in your little thumb drive or on your desktop, password protect them before you, as you save them. It takes a second. It's easy to do. And at least for the casual thief, it'll prevent them from breaking it. Now, certainly there are tools out there that will let you break through any of these things, but at least you've done something to protect yourself. All right, our next caller is Lou from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Lou. What's your question?
Hi, I want to wish you a happy 17th anniversary.
Well, thank you so much, Lou.
I'm a fairly new listener because I'm computer illiterate.
That's okay. And we love you because you don't know when our answers are wrong.
You're right. I bought a brand new Toshiba last year, a laptop, and I didn't know how to use it. I still don't. And it wasn't even used for 3 hours. I tried to use it 2 weeks ago, and all it said was, "Welcome to Toshiba." I shut it off. My son came, and he tried it because he's always working with computers. It did nothing more than "Welcome to Toshiba." Mm-hmm. He took it to, he has a person who works for him and does all of his computer work. And he opened it up, and he said, "The motherboard is burned out." I don't understand how a motherboard can get burned out with less than 3 hours of use.
During the time you were not using it, Lou, was it plugged into the power? Was it plugged into the wall?
As far as the battery was?
Yeah.
There were times, yes.
Yeah, it's possible that it got hit by lightning.
Surge.
Well, not actually hit by lightning, or there'd be a smoldering pile of plastic.
Yeah. Right. But that lightning hit something and that a surge came through the system and into your machine. Now, normally, that would actually be absorbed by the battery. But if it was and we had some serious lightning storms this summer, it's certainly a possibility that that's what happened. I'm not entirely shocked that happened, even though you weren't using it. The simple fact that it was plugged in could be enough to cause it to have a problem.
Really?
And sometimes it's things just break.
Yeah.
It's kind of a joke. Sometimes things fix themselves too.
But, yeah, right.
but it is possible that you got a bad, manufacturing problem and it would be fixed under warranty.
Yeah. You know, the real thing is there are they make millions of these things. So just law of averages says a few of them are just going to be bad. And that's why they have warranties. Had it been on during that time and died then, it might probably have still been under warranty, and you could have just taken it back and gotten it fixed.
It just passed warranty because I called them, and they said it's out of warranty because it was purchased in the spring, and I hadn't even been using it in the spring, and it hasn't been plugged in the whole time because I don't like lightning.
Had you called them before the warranty expired about this problem?
I spoke to them when I first got it.
Because sometimes that'll if you call about a problem, you're having a problem, and then the warranty expires before they solve the problem, sometimes they'll still solve it.
Wait a minute. I just got one question to ask, though. Lou, you said this thing will boot up and it gets to the main screen?
Yeah. It's very pretty, and it said, "Welcome to Toshiba."
I don't think that's a motherboard issue.
Well, that's the BIOS. Welcome to Toshiba. The BIOS is starting, but
I'm wondering, it could be the hard drive is bad.
Well, it could be the hard drive controller on the motherboard.
Yeah. Right. Now, did they see? I've had a lot of hard drives lately go on laptops. I mean, I've been going through laptop hard drives like you wouldn't believe.
I've had a lot of hard drives. Period.
Five
lately.
Months. I have done more laptop hard drives than I probably did in the past 3 years.
There's a commercial data recovery service we use called Drive Savers out in California. They do a lot with Hollywood movie and TVs. But you're looking at about $1,000 to recover a hard drive.
Yeah, and you just might need a new one the OS loaded.
One of our customers this week lost about 6 months of his brand new baby pictures. He sent it off to Drive Savers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it might be just the hard drive that's bad on it. Did they do a full test on the system?
Didn't speak to the man directly.
Yeah.
But this is what he had told my son. And
Lou, here's what you need to do. Have your son ask him if he did a full test on the system or just, quickly noticed that there was something wrong with the motherboard. If, in fact, he sees that the motherboard is physically burned out, we were just talking about this earlier, pop the machine open and look, then that's one thing. But if he just said, if what you heard is not what he actually told your son, because now we're playing telephone, right?
Right.
So if, in fact, it's not the motherboard, but, in fact, the hard drive, that's easily fixable.
Yeah.
So well, he had just said that it was the motherboard, and he said to my son, it's real, and he called Toshiba or somebody, and he said it just really doesn't pay to fix.
Is this a laptop or a desktop?
It's a laptop.
Yeah, you're looking at $500-$700 for a motherboard for a laptop.
Lou, if you want, I mean, ask him what he did with it. I mean, you know, we charge $30 plus tax for a diagnostic, and we literally test everything in the unit.
And you may end up with the same answer, but at least you've gotten a second opinion.
Where are you located?
I'm at 70 Empire Boulevard. It's called Enright PC. We're at, like I say, 70 Empire Boulevard, and we're open Monday through Friday. The number is 442-4843.
That's between Culver and 590.
Yeah, it's just up past Dan's Crafts.
Across from St. Ambrose?
Yep, right across from St. Ambrose. So bring it on over, and we'll take a look at it for you.
All right. So give Dave a call and we'll see what happens.
So it's always frustrating with laptops because the parts are so expensive and they're all proprietary. That's what makes most desktops so much cheaper is they make a million of the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm. Right, whereas in laptops they only make thousands of the exact same thing.
And changing parts isn't like a desktop.
Yeah.
You just can't universally say, oh, give me this floppy drive or this CD-ROM or this motherboard or this display. They're all unique.
And many of them are built into the motherboard, which is one of the things that makes the motherboard so expensive.
Yep.
Our next caller is Lance from Penfield, New York. Welcome, hey. Lance.
Hi.
How are you?
Comment and a question.
Yes.
Comment on Tango Thunderbird finds a infected file in the Thunderbird trash folder. I tell it to empty the trash. The file is still there until I reboot.
Yeah, it's probably a virus that came through email, and the virus is running and won't let you delete itself.
Right, because it's a TSR.
I don't recognize ever having seen that particular file on my email. It came attached to something rather. It hasn't happened in a couple of months, so I don't know.
Yeah, as Steve said, what likely happened, it's a virus that tries to hang on until that reboot happens, and then it's gone from your trash.
Sometimes even a warm
boot. A question on printing. You were talking about old programs and old operating systems.
Yeah.
Well, I have a DOS calendar program, which works fine with Windows 98, but it tries to print to my... dot matrix printer with PRN. Now, years ago, there was an assign command that I could tell PRN to be LPT1. That doesn't exist anymore.
Correct.
Sometimes the first time you can go to a DOS prompt and say print a text file, and it asks you which print device you mean, and then you can say LPT1.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not hearing you.
If you open a DOS prompt, or are you on a DOS computer or a DOS shell inside of Windows?
Windows XT, and it has a DOS opening, DOS command line.
You have to go into your printer setup, and there's a section in there for capturing a DOS LPT port, which assigns a Windows printer to a DOS port.
Mm-hmm.
And then in your DOS command line, if you say print and then like a text file, autoexec.bat, it'll ask you which print device, and you can tell it LPT1 or whichever parallel port your printer's connected to.
Right.
That may work. But, yeah, we're getting farther and farther away from the DOS days. I had a customer last week with DOS 5 running a receipt printer. And something got messed up on it, and we're having a hard time trying to find replacement drivers for it.
Right.
We're just getting farther and farther away from that type of equipment. In this caller's case, a calendar program, you can probably find lots of new calendar programs for Windows and maybe even some that will read your old data files.
It's going to get harder and harder because now that Microsoft has officially dropped, you know, ME98 right. and all the rest of them.
And XP will get officially dropped as soon as Vista comes out.
Yeah, exactly. So,
can you hear me now?
Yeah, the instant Vista is released, support for XP will stop.
Right. That's
why are you the
true.
Only one that can't be heard on that microphone?
I
Salmon
don't know.
Can be heard crystal clear when he uses that microphone.
It's got a thing for me.
It's all about Dave. We don't know what that's about, but there he is. Our next caller is Bob.
I'm the oldest one here. You don't mess with it.
That's right. He's old. I got seniority. Most of the time, I got to be honest with you, it's good not to hear what he's saying.
Well, yeah, and I was always told to respect my elders.
And
so
it's right. for you is everybody in the building.
Yeah.
Yeah. And speaking of which, we all have birthdays coming up in the next week or so.
Yes,
you're next Sunday.
I am next Sunday.
And then you're the 19th, and then I'm the 20th.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, okay,
you guys are seriously that close together with birthdays?
Yes.
Many
it's almost like
apart,
you were born to do this.
We were born to do this. Something about the apparently something about the Christmas New Year's season that makes brainiacs.
And a lot of babies born in September. Really cold January.
So. I was going to say something about a cold January.
So you got to remember, though, next Sunday is Nick's birthday.
He's not here next Sunday.
I'll be here. Why aren't I here next Sunday?
I don't know. I was just hoping.
I was going to say, is there something I don't know about that I'm not going to hear next
Wishful
Sunday?
Thinking on my part. Nothing real. Our next caller is Bob from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I've got a Commodore from 1942.
Wow. That's if it was from 1942, it's the kind of Commodore that owns a yacht.
Exactly. Hey, quick question. I talked to you a couple weeks ago, and I'm looking for an external hard drive, a backup.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not sure. It seems like all the stores carry the basic or the same name. And I'm trying to think of it. I think it starts with a W or something.
Western Digital.
Well, there's several different brands of hard drives. Yeah, Western Digital makes hard drives. They also make external chassis. You'll find the same thing from Mac Store. We like the LaCie brand because it comes with backup software, too. So some of the other ones don't.
And where do I get that? That's a high-end one?
Medium end.
Yeah, medium end.
Yeah.
Okay.
They have two series. They have a Porsche series that actually was designed by F.A. Porsche. So you can have a Porsche on your desk.
Okay. Is that Western Digital? I mean, it seems like everybody carries that. Is that not a good product? Or
no, that's one of the more common ones.
Here's the thing. Western Digital, though, I would recommend going with Western Digital over, say, some of the others, because Western Digital still stands behind backing up the warranty on the hard drives are a lot better.
A lot of times they have longer warranties than other companies.
Yeah, 2 to 3 years.
Seagate would be a higher brand, and they typically have a 3 to 5 year warranty.
Okay, that's Seagate, and where would I purchase that?
Sort of places.
Yeah, you got to find, if you're buying a package deal, you don't really have control over what hard drive you can put in it.
Yeah, the other way to do is to buy a raw hard drive and then buy a raw empty chassis.
Yeah, an enclosure, and then just put it together and format it.
Okay, great. Well, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Thank you. We are going to take a break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Rob Linton, with me, Nick Francesco, on the 17th anniversary edition of Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
We're not sure what Sean Hannity knows about computers. But then again, we're not sure what the Soundbites boys know about anything but computers. Catch Sean Hannity later today on Wham! Now, back to Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Happy anniversary, baby! Got you on my mind. Happy anniversary, baby. Got you on my mind.
Yes, indeed. It is the 17th anniversary edition of Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And we've been here a lot longer than we have any right to be. And we're on 1180 WHAM. Our next let's talk a little bit. I've never done this before. I'm all new to this. there's a new web browser out there called Browzar, Browzar at browzar.com, and it does not leave user footprints on your system. Automatically deletes internet caches, histories, and cookies whenever you shut the browser down. specifically designed to protect your privacy by not retaining details of the websites that you've gone to or searched or whatever. Most web browsers automatically save your searches and internet caches and histories and stuff like that. You can certainly delete all those things, but users who don't know how to do that or tend not to leave a trail of where they've been online behind them in the browser. It's free. You don't even have to register to get it. It deletes internet cache, history cookies, and autocomplete forms. Now, the problem you have with that is it doesn't stop law enforcement agencies from tracking you online. They don't make people invisible on the internet. It's just a privacy tool for your own desktop. Law enforcement can still go to the ISPs if they want. They don't override any of that stuff. But if you've been wondering how to cut your browsing history out from other people because you're doing something you shouldn't be doing, you can admit that by going to browser.com, and Steve has that up on the website.
And strangely enough, that feature is already built into Apple Safari on the Mac.
There you go.
Private browsing, they call it.
There you go.
One of our Cider Q&A meetings. Oh, we should mention the Cider Apple Cider meetings are next week. So we'll talk about it Sunday. But we're back on our Q&A meetings after a summer hiatus. We were showing off Google Maps once on summer hiatus, and so I'm going to all the different neat places. Boulder Dam is pretty cool to see on Google mm-hmm. Maps. And then I just jokingly typed in Area 51.
There it is.
And I got to Groom Lake Air Force Base, and I made a joke about the black helicopters landing on the lawn outside, and a guy got scared, got up, and left.
Oh, yeah. I know who that was, too. Yep. All right. Our next caller is Mike from Buffalo, New York. Hello, Mike. What's up?
Hi there, guys. Happy anniversary.
Thank you so much.
I thought my mind was playing. Did you mention it in the first hour? Because I'm sitting here. Was that Memorial Day weekend or was that Labor Day weekend?
No, it was definitely Labor Day, and I did not announce it in the first hour.
Okay.
I should have, and I didn't.
I was wondering about it. Anyway, I'm going to call up. I'm a longtime listener, and I go back. Let's see. One of the calls I remember was all the time that your IDE port blew out, and Dave had to put a SCSI card in your computer years ago.
Oh my. Whoa. You have been a long time listener.
Yes.
Wow.
And then let's see what hit my nerve was the talk about the Dell capacitors.
Mm-hmm.
We use them at work on machines that are on 24/7, and I would say anyone who has a Dell that's coming off a warranty, take it down to Dave's shop, have him take a look at the capacitors. Leave it on, leave it on for a week. Then take it down to Dave's shop and have him look at the capacitors before it goes off warranty, because we've had terrible trouble with them. They're not really meant to be on, I would say, more than 8 hours or so. We replace motherboard after motherboard after motherboard with them.
Now, are you talking about the desktops or the servers?
The desktops.
Yeah.
Well, that's a distinction that most computer buyers don't understand. We see a lot of businesses that buy the cheap Dell PCs that are only designed for home users running 3 or 4 hours a day, and then try to run that for 10, 12 hours a day in a business and are surprised when it fails in a few months.
Yep. Right, that's why when Dave builds my new machines, he always gets me server motherboards. He knows I never turn my machine off, ever.
Yeah, all of the computer companies have high-end server-based models that are designed to run 24/7.
But if you take a desktop and turn it into a server, it's going to die. You know that. You're absolutely right, Mike.
That's it. The one question I've got, and this goes back, this is my pet peeve. I come from the PDP-11 world. Steve.
That was
Steve
my first computer. Like I learned PDP assembler.
Yeah. I know you used to use one over at Robert's Wesleyan.
Yeah.
But that had a better backup system than Symantec delivers today.
Yeah, yeah.
But Brew, backup and restore utility, worked better than what, Symantec's talking about, how wonderful their incremental backups are. Has there anything developed? This is the one thing that over the years I haven't seen. Is it a really good backup system like they had for VMS or...
how about Brew?
What do you mean?
Brew is out there. You can buy Brew backup, BRU, the BRU backup server. It's available. I know it's available for Linux and the Mac. I do not know if it's available for Windows. But if you go to tolisgroup.com, you can actually read up about BRU. It's still out there. It still exists. It's still the product it always was. So check that out. We're going to take another quick break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and 17 years of Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
It's Soundbites, America's longest-running computer show on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Once again, here's Nick Francesco.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And you're listening to 17 years of Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Our next thank you. Thank you very much. 17 years. Our next caller, Jim from Bath, New York. What's your question, Jim?
Anniversary.
Thank you.
Question is, I have an older Hewlett Packard computer. It hasn't been used in almost a year, and I powered it up last weekend. Now, it's been plugged in all along, and I wanted to copy a program off of it. And I found in Windows Explorer, it won't let me copy to a floppy or to the built-in zip drive.
Well, two issues. So your previous issue is you usually cannot copy programs to another computer and expect them to work.
Yeah.
They have to be installed from the original installation
disk. Because
other
DLLs and all, they have to be installed.
Right. As to why it won't copy to a floppy or a zip, does it try to copy and say it can't, or just doesn't give you the option?
Doesn't. It won't even copy a file, like a Word text file or something.
Do you get an error message?
No, I don't.
You drag the icon onto the floppy icon and nothing happens?
Right. Now, the funny part was I had WinFile also on that computer.
Mm-hmm.
In WinFile, it would let me copy.
Well, then you... okay.
Are you trying to drag the icon or using the send to command?
I tried them all, the send to drag it.
Because I have seen problems where dragging icons doesn't work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But send to does?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about going into Windows Explorer, finding the folder, copying the folder... out of the usually it's under programs, grabbing that folder, copying that to a floppy.
That I didn't try.
Try that, and you very well might have better luck.
Yeah, let us know. Otherwise, I don't quite know what to tell you, except that it sounds like something's been corrupted in the system, and you need to take it to somebody, have them take a look at it.
If it's just a quick, you want to grab a couple files off, and you're a little technically minded, you can easily pull the hard drive out of the old computer, stick it temporarily into another one, and copy the file that way.
Right. Our next caller is Ed from Wellington, Ontario. How are things up in Wellington?
Well, things are wet. I guess they are in Rochester, too.
Yes, they are. Are you catching us over the web or on the air?
No, on the radio.
Wow.
Cool. Oh, yeah. No, it's always direct on the radio.
Cool.
It's a booming signal over here.
Yes, it would be.
50 over 9 plus, you know.
Yep, yep.
Anyway, I was calling because I have received approval for Zoom text.
Yep.
And I'll be getting, with the new machine and the XP and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm using Internet, I should say Internet Explorer. Get out of here. I never use that.
Yeah, right.
I'm using Firefox and all the rest of the stuff from the website.
Right. Yep.
Now, I'm just wondering, would there be any conflict, or have you heard any conflict between Firefox and Zoom Text?
No, there is not. Matter of fact, it also works well with JAWS. If you're familiar with that product?
Well, right now I'm using JAWS and Magic, and that's why I'm switching from them over to Zoom Text.
Yeah, no, Zoom Text will work fine.
Yeah?
We should tell everybody that Zoom Text and JAWS and stuff like that are specifically created for the visually impaired so that they can use a computer like the rest of us. But that should work great.
Yeah, no problem, Ed.
Glad to hear you're catching us in Ontario. Well, apparently we're done for another week. I want to apologize to everyone to whom we did not get. I want to thank everyone who did call in. For those of you to whom we did not get, please call in earlier next week as we begin our 18th year of broadcasting. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton. I specifically want to thank all of you who have kept us on the air for 18 years. You are incredibly patient and kind, and we want to thank you all. We've had a great 17 years. It's been fun every single dang week. And I'm hoping that at least the next 17 years will go the same way. I'm Nick Francesco, and at 58 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.